Accession number 31425, Mr. Mick Gagan, Real 18. Now, did you ever get the chance to go on either local leave in the area or back to Tokyo before you were wounded the second time? Or?
No. I was offered it. I was offered leave after my officer got killed.
Okay. So, is there anything else before your officer got killed? Cause I know you want to make quite a bit about the officer, because you've written an article about him also.
Many times, you know, you'd be out and you'd be up in the hills, we've had snipers firing at us, taking pot shot at us, and things like that. You'd be going from one, and all of a sudden a bullet, you'd hear it hitting something, you know. Someone seen you and took a pot shot at you.
Were there any casualties from snipers?
There was a few, but not a lot, because the distance where they were and to get a proper, by the time that they had fired a couple of rounds, where they were, not only us, all the infantry, and they'd open up with mortars and everything. So I don't think that whatever they threw at us, they got 10 times as much back, I can assure you that.
What about, did you have any South Koreans attached to the unit?
We only had Koreans as like porters and things like this. We didn't have no military, but they were on two hills away to our right, and we used to support them with our 25-pounders, because we could see them, and if the Chinese put in any attack or anything against them, we had a good full view.
So this was a South Korean unit? Yeah.
Yeah, we had a good full view, and we could fire at them. Sometimes we had the South Korean officers come over to us to thank us and to mix with our people. It's the same as the Americans from the 936 Field Artillery. They used to come over just as, because we were all in that area, we all relied on one another.
Now, tell me about your officer then. Do you know when this was? Well, tell us the whole story.
Well, Captain Thompson, he was...
Do you know his first name?
Captain John Kidd Thompson.
Is it Thompson with a P?
Yeah.
Now, what happened? Well, first tell us about him. What was he like as an officer? Before we go on to what happened to
him. He was a great officer. He had been in World War II. He had been a pilot in the Army Air Corps, which was, them days, was the Air OP. He had been in the Special Air Service, and also the Special Boat Service. And he was a character on his own. He didn't like taking orders much. During the war, he was a major, but he came back to war substantiated rank of captain. And he was a great officer. He wasn't afraid of nothing or anybody. And he loved a drink. He was always full of luck. You could hear him anywhere you went. You'd either be singing, making a noise, making a nuisance of himself when he's had a few beers. But everyone liked him. You could get on well with him any time. And he'd shout. I've seen him give people a right telling off, even his officers underneath him. The next minute, he's forgot it. And this happened many times. And me and him, we've had a few rows, but it all come out in the end, like, you know. I think that sometimes it was through the cause of battle, what used to do all this, your nerves would get on top of you and everything, you know, and no sleep or anything like that, especially in the OP. Because him and myself, we've been awake for days, hardly any sleep at all.
Well, tell us a bit, we'll just drop that in. How tired, what were the effects of fatigue then?
Well, the fatigues, we you know, you're there, and you may get Chinese coming right close, and you could hear different things, but you can't bring down gunfire because they're so near our own troops as well. So it was the infantry role to sort these out, but you're awake all the time. I mean, myself, I was standing up once and I fell down. I dropped off to sleep standing up. I hadn't had much sleep at all. And different things like that. But Tommy, he was always, we used to call him Tommy. everyone used to call him Tommy. And he didn't mind you calling him Tommy, although he was the captain. You know, I'd go, when we're back in lines, I'd say, "Where's Tommy?" And that, everyone knew him as Tommy. And he was a good officer. He'd go out. We've been out many times on patrols. And he was always very efficient. And being through the Second World War, he understood what loss of life was, and he'd always be there to protect his men. He'd never sent anyone out unless he could do it himself.
Now tell me the story of how he was killed. What was the date? And with the date and everything.
Well, what happened, we were told about the 21st of June 1952 that we were going to take a hill on the side of Hill 355. I think it was 222, Hill 222. It had been long well before, the King's Shropshire Light Infantry were on that hill and they had taken it. But the Chinese, when they give the big push down, they retook it. And they had been holding it ever since. And many times we had shelled the hill, but the Chinese and North Koreans behind that hill, they thought they were building up a big load of reinforcements. Because you've got to realise that 52, it was a fixed line, and the more land you took, and they was trying for an armistice, and the more land you took, the more you got when the armistice come. So they were putting in big attacks here and there, the Chinese. And on this time, we were told on the 21st that we were going to go with the Welsh Regiment. We were going to take this hill, try and take it. And also, as reinforcements who would come round Hill 355 would be the Royal Norfolk Regiment. Because they were on the hill 355, which was also known as Little Gibraltar. And they'd do that. They were coming round. But the night before, we got everything ready.
Now, how'd you get ready for it?
Well, we got our sets ready. And myself, I had I think it was a 21 set on me back. I had a holder, and I had a battery fitted into that. Which was very heavy, and a set, and I was going to put that on my back like a big pack. And one of the fellas, one of my signallers, he was bringing up the cords and everything. We never fitted the set up. We couldn't put any leads onto the set because you wasn't, you know, you were climbing the hills and everything, so you had nothing there. You was just going up and try and set up an OP. And so the night before, on the 22nd of June, I had my lads getting all the equipment ready and everything like that, checking all the guns, which we had mostly Sten guns. Tommy, Captain Thompson, had his revolver, and I had an American carbine as well, besides my Sten gun. And we were getting everything ready, and a strange thing happened. Now, Captain Thompson had been in much action in his life, but that night he said to me, "I'm going to see the Padre." And we didn't know where the Padre was, and it seemed strange because he was a couldn't care less officer if he was going into battle. He knew his stuff. And he went and found a padre. And when he came back, he was very quiet. Something which I hadn't known before. And then, just before it got dark, we got in the jeep. And just my small party. And we went on the side of Hill 355 to join the Welsh Regiment. And we were all going into trenches, getting ready so that we'd be all prepared, because we was going to attack this hill at daybreak. And what had happened as well, the British used to send a searchlight right across the hills. They'd give a warning, and they'd send a searchlight right across the hills, and this was on. Now, we were going to attack in the early hours, and right up to when we nearly attacked, that searchlight was still on, which it shouldn't have been. And then it did go off, and then as soon as we attacked, we got cut down with, there was machine gun fire. They must have known we was going, because don't forget they had intelligence as well, and they opened up on us straight away, and we had opened up, and within a few minutes a fellow's jumped up, and a Chinese, and he opened up with his gun, and he caught Captain Thompson. He got shot in the head. Bombardier Dalton, he had got one right in the arm and shot all his elbows and everything. He was badly, badly wounded. And that was when I got one in the ankle, the other ankle, to what I'd already been hurt with. But I was very lucky, because that never hit a bone or nothing like that. It went through my flesh. So we managed to get with the fellas what was there. There was a hell of a lot of wounded on there, because being caught in the open. And then it was getting daylight by this time, and we was exposed on three sides to the enemy. And some of the, couple of the, my lads managed to get Captain Thompson's body back. And I was trying to get, trying to set up my OP, but I couldn't. It was so bad. And the Welsh regiment, they was coming back down the hill. We were getting back, but there was a lot of wounded. So I got back. I managed to get my lads back.
So we went back onto Hill 3-4. Retreated?
No, we went back to the trenches at the bottom of the hill where we started out from at the beginning. And there was still a lot of firing going on the hill. And I went back, and I brought in, and three times I went back on the hill bringing in wounded people of the Welsh regiment. And always remember, there was one corporal of the Welsh regiment, he had been shot in the throat. I got him back, and I carried an officer back, and then many years later I found out that that was Lieutenant Richard Bingley, and he had been wounded in previous actions in Arnhem, and he came from Newton Abbott in Devon, and he had bullet wounds in the side and his ribs and everything like that, and I'd carried him back. And it was many years later when I found out he was one of those what I'd brought back. And we managed, but that day there was a lot of people wounded and killed at the Welsh regiment, mostly wounded. And my own lads, I'd sent them all back earlier to my battery with Captain Thompson's body. And I got my leg done up, and I managed to get back to my battery. I got a lift back to my battery just when I was having a service for Captain Thompson, going to put him on a truck and get his body sent back to the United Nations Cemetery. And I got back there just before the, just when the service started, so I managed to pay my last respects to a really gallant man who I was really proud to serve with.
Now, there's a follow-up story to that, because you wrote an article. Tell us about that, and you've always tracked down his descendants, everything.
Yes, I many years later, this was, I went to Rothbury to try and find his family, and this was maybe 20 years or 22 years later, and I couldn't find his family, and someone said, well, go and see the old vicar. So I went to the church, and I found an old vicar. and he knew of the family. And it turns out that Captain Thompson, he was the only boy, he was the only son, and a short while after, when they heard of his death, his father had a heart attack and died, and his mother, so they say, committed suicide. So the whole family had gone within no time. And then someone said that he had a cousin down in Morpeth, and I spent a whole day making inquiries and everything, because I didn't know the name of them, of the woman. And luckily, in one post office, a woman gave me a name, and I went and found this. Someone said where they're working, and I went outside Morpeth, about a mile outside on a chicken farm, and I found his cousin, who was very surprised to see me, and she said that she had a photo of John. It was an old photo, a bit damaged, but I was quite welcome to it if I wanted it, and which I did. And I went back to her house. The farmer let her have time off. I went back to her house and she gave me a photo, which I brought when I did come home. I had it repaired, because those days you didn't have computers or anything like this. Everything had to be done by hand, so it was repaired as best as possible by hand. And I also went to the church in Rothbury, because in a church at Rothbury there's a small plaque, and it says, in memory of John Kidd Thompson, killed in Korea, 23rd of June, 1952. But it being brass, I took photos of it, and I had to have that brought back, because you couldn't see the lettering hardly, and I had it done in a professional photographer's, and they brought the figures up and everything, so that, and also they put the photo above the plaque. So I got the photo and a copy of the plaque all in one, and this is what I wrote my story about.
That was published in the local paper.
That was published in the 50th anniversary in 1953. In 2003, at the end of, that was the 50th anniversary of the end of the Korean War, and that was published in the Northumberland Gazette.
Now, was it the 22nd of June or the 26th, the 23rd, or was it overnight?
No, it was in the early hours of the 23rd of June when he was killed. It must have been about 4:30 or 5, and it must have been around about that time when he was, because everything, it was so vague and everything, it was dark, we was getting mortared terrible, and I had mortars laying within feet of me and my fellas, and luckily, they, you know, there was only another chap got hurt, but he got flesh wounds same as me.
And what was your personal, what was your nerve like? I mean, did it affect you, all this fighting? And that's two rookie escapes.
No, it didn't affect me. I think that over the years, from when I was about 12 years old, I'd been indifferent. So I think I was well hardened to anything like that. I had no fear. And even the officers, you know, one officer said to me, I wish I was like you. I said, no. He said, well, you're not frightened. I said, I am, but I don't show it. You know, so it's just one of those things in life, how you are.
Now, what happened after you? Well, how was this wound treated? I mean, you know.
Well,
or was it just the same?
I had it done. The officer at the bottom of the hill, I put an old dressing over it, and the officer in the Welch Regiment, the medical man there, he put a big load of bandage and everything over it. And when I went back to my unit, to my battery, I went to see them. I didn't have to go in a hospital, and he patched me up again, and I was very lucky that it hadn't caught any bones or anything like this.
So it was a big rip, a cut.
Yeah, it was a
deep cut.
Yeah, it was across the ankle.
Across the top of the ankle.
Yeah, and luckily that it had just skimmed the bone. And the doctor done it up, but me other one who were very badly wounded, who had got the, he got taken to an American hospital. And the next day, because we were there in the barracks, in the battery, and the next day a couple of us went to see our friend who had been really badly wounded, and he was crying and that in this American unit before he went, I was going to fly him back to Japan. And then he'd most likely come back to England from there, because I doubt whether he couldn't stay in the army. He was badly shot in his arms. So, but I was, as I say, I thought I had a charmed life, because many times, and one instance, watch, one fella, a shell had landed near us, and there was a fella named Harry Prince, and all this dust had gone into my eyes. And Harry was bringing me out of the bunker because the dust had come in. And Harry was a signaller, and he was in my party. And he was just walking back with me to get my eyes washed out in a little command, little medical post at the back of 355. And a shell landed within about 10 feet of us and ricocheted. It never went off. And it was just going in a distance, ricocheting. Now, if that had gone off, we might have never been here. So I reckon I had a charmed life.
Now, what happened then after that wound? Was it much longer to go? That was in June.
That was late June. Yeah. But the officer, Captain Avery, he had taken over from Tommy. He said to me, would you like to go on R&R? To Japan, rest and recuperation. I said no. I said I haven't got all that much longer to do. I don't want to go. I said because I've got a debt to pay. And Tommy got killed. I said I've got a debt to pay, and he always remembered that. And I stayed there and just carried on as I've always been doing.
Now, any other incidents, during, you know, after that?
Only like. You know, shell fire and everything like that. I went out on another couple of patrols with the Welsh Regiment, but it wasn't too far. It was just at the bottoms of the hills in the area where we were, because you couldn't go around the valleys because the Chinese had emplacements and everything like that. So we knew they were there. And now and again, the Welsh had mortar them and everything like that, you know. But they were so close, that, like, you got two hills coming down, so you couldn't go around there because, it would be a complete waste of time. But I must tell you one thing. Before the Welsh took over, the Leicestershire Regiment, Royal Leicestershire Regiment, was on this hill.
And 355.
At the side of 355, at the bottom, yes. And there was a road going into up to the north. It had been there before the war or anything, but it had been shelled and everything. And there was all barbed wire right across it. And this day, a big American gun arrived with a trailer full of men. And he says to the... And there was an officer down there of the Leicester Regiment, and he said to him... can you open up? So the officer said, well, what are you talking about? Because you had these barriers, barbed wire, you could shift them out of the way quick if you had to, you know. And he said, well, we've got to go and fire somewhere. So he said, no, the enemy are up there. He said, we know what we're doing. And he went and he said to the officer, shift it. And the officer just shifted it and let him go. And a few days later, the American military police come up. Have they seen anyone with a gun and everything? And it turned out that this officer, he was going to the place what he should have been shelling on. But he was actually going there in his truck. And he went into, and that was the last we see of him, with a truck and full of ammunition.
And they were captured?
Yep, must have been. Yeah. sometimes we got these shells, we had a shell go off and fired by the Chinese, and it was an American shell. So they had caught some of their equipment, but it wasn't enough for this big gun. It was a smaller shell. And you got different things happen like that, you know. Also, there was heard a wailing one night, and the officer down there, and someone from the listening post had given, and they went out, and it was a Chinese officer. He'd given himself up. He'd come and given himself up, and things like that. So,
what happened to him?
Well, they just took him. He's given himself up, so he'd be treated well. He wouldn't be treated as a prisoner of war in that respect, because he'd have to come and they'd interrogate him and find out and everything like that. And a lot of them were taken to Formosa and things like that, because I've met a man many years later who had been taken there. He was a North Korean.
Were there many Chinese and North Korean prisoners?
Not too many, no. There wasn't too many, because the simple reason that you'd be on a fixed line and you'd only go out if there was patrols or anything like that. See, what the main thing at that time was, one company trying to take another company, you know, trying to take this hill, take that hill, so that you've got everything established when peace did come and you'd have more land to haggle with and everything like that. So
were you very aware of the peace negotiations at the time?
Yes, we, from where we were on Hill 355, right in the distance, right over Panmunjom Way, within that area, we could see places, and there was a building, and we blasted it once. I don't think it was in Panmunjom, but we could see this and a lot of movement, and we called our guns down, and we did blast it well. So, but we didn't know what was going on or anything. All we was worried about was saving our own lives and not letting the enemy take the hills, you know, which saved
the
Chinese.
You knew about the peace negotiations?
Yeah, the peace negotiations were going on, but nothing what we knew about. So, you know, because when they were saying, oh, they got this and got that, but to us it was still a big war going on. And it was the biggest war since World War II.
So what happened? How did you come? Is there anything else before you come to leave them?
Not really.
So when did you leave them? Oh. You left them. They didn't come with you, did they?
Oh, no. I left individual, because I think it was around about the October 52.
And how did you feel on leaving them?
Well, if we could have just stayed on for a few months, I would have stayed on, because I asked if I could stay on. But they said, no, you know, you've done your time. This had all come through from the Ministry of Defence, things like that. So you have to go.
You were sorry to go then?
In a way, yes. I was in a way, I was sorry to go. But I knew that when I did come home, that I'd get demobbed and I'd be finished with the army. But if you could have stayed on for another year, I would have done. But they wouldn't let you. That was a ruling.
Why would you stay for another year?
Just to stay with the regiment till they had finished their time in Korea. You know, because the job I was doing, I'd been trained for all my life, like in the army, and I had a free hand, so I didn't have much to worry about in that respect, and I could more or less do what I want. And we had a good major; he was the battery commander. He never worried me or anything like that. So, but leaving the lads, it was, leaving some of those lads, it was very, very hard, because you got used to them and all like that, you know. Although the living conditions was terrible, you had good friends.